Good day, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome to UBS's Washington Weekly Podcast. So each week we do like to check in with the UBS U.S. Office of Public Policy to get thoughts on recent developments within the Beltway and beyond. Our conversation today will focus in on the nomination and confirmation process to fill the SCOTUS vacancy left by the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg of the upcoming first presidential debate. We'll also get into where we stand with respect to fiscal stimulus, the prospects for a government shutdown, and more. So joining me on the line today for the conversation, pleased to welcome back Shane Lieberman. Shane is the Federal Affairs Manager with the UBS U.S. Office of Public Policy based in Washington, D.C. So, Shane, welcome back. Great to be with you as always, and looking forward to catching up on today's podcast.
Thanks, Dan. Good to be with you. Hope everyone had a great week, and look forward to our conversation.
Absolutely. So, Shane, I know there is a lot we want to get to today, and I believe it was on Wednesday of this week you spoke with my colleague Anthony Pastore. You did a special podcast on the Supreme Court, and you did speak about the vacancy of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Can you give us a bit of an update on where we stand since you last spoke with Anthony?
Yeah. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is lying in state in the Capitol, and President Trump is scheduled to announce his nomination tomorrow. We're looking at the timeline is starting to become a little bit clearer, and Republicans are going to move pretty quickly here after President Trump makes his announcement and start the vetting and background check process. Then they'll have committee hearings, a committee vote, and then a full Senate vote. If they push ahead, we could see a vote mid-late October. There is some thought that they may hold off on the final vote until after the election, so it's a little fluid. But things are lining up for them to move quickly. It should be one of the quicker confirmation processes we've seen in history. Taking a step back politically, we haven't seen this benefit or hurt one side or the other. But I would say, I think for the moment, it does help President Trump. It takes the focus off of COVID-19, which is a weakness with him and voters. So for the moment, this helps. But, I think depending on how the nominee does at hearings, that moment of help could easily increase or go away. So I don't think this has dramatically changed polling at this moment, but we're waiting to see more accurate polling come out.
Okay, so it does sound like the next 24 hours will be interesting, and I'm sure we'll hear more developments on this front next week. But Shane, thank you for bringing us up to speed on where we currently stand. I know another topic in focus is additional fiscal stimulus measures, and this is something you and I have spoken about in great depth on prior Washington Weekly podcasts. But in terms of another round of fiscal stimulus, the prospects for anything anytime soon seem to be dimming. So where does this currently stand?
Yes, we would agree that it is dimming. I mean, the effort to pass another relief and stimulus bill took another step back this week with the partisan acrimony over the Supreme Court vacancy. And this acrimony will only grow over the next month as President Trump's nominee is considered. excuse me. There are a few members from both parties working together to try and forge a compromise, but they're in the clear minority right now. There's a group of more moderate House Democrats that are pushing Speaker Pelosi to accept a bill in the range of $2.2 trillion. Dollars, but she's not biting on that. House Democrats are scheduled to be in next week and may try another attempt at a stimulus bill, but I think it's more posturing. The best case scenario that we see at this point is probably something in the lame duck after the election time frame for action here, but that's not a given either. Depending on the election results, some people may say, we're not going to do anything until 2021. So I think at the time, at this moment, it's not a great outlook for another stimulus bill, but that's for this moment. It could happen in the November-December timeframe, or in 2021.
So, Shane, sticking with Congress, though perhaps on a brighter note, we have been hearing more progress having been made on the avoidance of a government shutdown. It appears a breakthrough was made earlier this week, and this will extend into next week. So where do we currently stand with that?
Yeah, this week the House passed a bill to fund the government to December 11th. If no action is taken, there would be a government shutdown next week on October 1st. So this has passed the House already. The Senate is probably going to take this up Tuesday, and we expect them to pass it in a strong bipartisan manner. There shouldn't be a government shutdown for the time being, but when this comes back December 11th, we'll probably be faced with this tiresome threat of a government shutdown. I would also note that this bill contains a one-year reauthorization of highway and infrastructure spending to get through to September 30th of next year, 2021. This is very helpful for a lot of states. It brings certainty to their construction plans. So a lot of those in the infrastructure world are very pleased with this development. Even though it's not a big, significant highway bill, it does smooth the road over and hopefully pave the way for maybe a big infrastructure package in 2021.
Okay, so more to follow up on there, and perhaps we'll see some more developments on this front next week. But thank you for the update on that, Shane. I do want to get your thoughts on this headline from this past week, this surrounding the peaceful transfer of power, remarks that came out of the White House, and we heard about this from Congress as well. Both the House and the Senate commented on this development. So what can you share with us there?
Yeah, this was really an unforced error by President Trump to not clearly say that, you know, we have a process in the U.S. Where we have a peaceful transfer, and that's something that really sets us apart from others in the world. And you know, you've seen both Democrats and Republicans push back. In fact, the Senate passed a resolution reaffirming its support for peaceful transfer of power. This resolution passed unanimously. Both Democrats and Republicans supported it. And this should be viewed as more than just a resolution saying, you know, we support peaceful transfer. You know, remember that the inauguration is held at the Capitol, and it's done, you know, with the House and Senate, you know, really setting the stage and taking part in it. So you're seeing congressional leaders say that we're going to move ahead with those plans to have an inauguration that transfers power over to Biden or re-inaugurates President Trump, no matter what happens here. So this is somewhat reassuring that, you know, whoever wins on November 3rd will be sworn in. And that transfer of power will happen. Now, you know, there's obviously that other part of how will the loser react and how will Americans who voted for the person who lost the election react. So, you know, but I think this is maybe a little bit overplayed, but, you know, obviously it is concerning to think about it in the greater context. And it's something we'll continue to keep an eye on, but I think the actions by the Senate and House have been somewhat reassuring.
Appreciate the clarity on that, Shane. So maybe we can turn to the campaign trail, focus in on that for a few moments. I know both sides are gearing up for the first presidential debate that will take place next week, next Tuesday evening, I believe. So a highly anticipated event. What will be the format, just given the environment, what it is? What will the format consist of? And any topics and or issues that are expected to be addressed at this first debate?
Yes. As you point out, the debate is Tuesday, September 29th. It's going to be at 9 p.m. Eastern time. It will be a 90-minute debate, and over those 90 minutes, there'll be six 15-minute segments. The segments will be on the Trump and Biden record, the Supreme Court, COVID-19, the economy, race and violence in our cities, and finally, the integrity of the election. So six important topics to be discussed over 90 minutes. The moderator for the debate will be Chris Wallace, who is a very smart and capable in his questioning. And so I think it'll be very interesting if he does some back and forth between President Trump and former Vice President Biden. This will be important. You know, generally, when you look back at first debates in history, at least modern history, a lot of presidents who were running for a second term lost the first debate. And that helped them kind of as a wake-up call. You know, President Obama, you could I think he lost the first debate to Mitt Romney, and George W. Bush, I think he lost the first debate to John Kerry. And that really kind of reinvigorates that president to come back and have a stronger debate. And often, you know, the second and third debates are what some Americans remember right before they vote. However, usually the first debate is the highest, has the highest viewership. So this is important. And I will again say that it's Tuesday, September 29th at 9 p.m. Eastern.
I will certainly be watching, but I'm sure we'll do some follow-ups when we connect again next week, Shane. Looking forward to getting your thoughts and reflections on what we see on Tuesday evening. So before we close out, I know we've been keeping track of polling during our conversations over the past few weeks and months. What's currently being indicated in terms of polls, in particular within these key swing states?
Yeah, I think you're starting to see them tighten a little bit. As we had talked about probably a little while back, you know, once you got through the summer and people got reinvigorated, you know, things will tighten. But you still see Biden leading in swing states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, although I did see a Michigan poll that had President Trump up by 1 point. But the other ones have been fairly consistent that had Biden up in Michigan. So I think you'll continue to see that trend of the tightening in those make or break states, but Biden still leads, and you know he just if he can hold on to that lead, you know, I would expect him to win on November 3rd.
Okay, well, still some runway ahead of us, but Shane, it was great catching up with you this morning. Thank you for joining us on the Washington Weekly Podcast. A lot coming up next week that we'll look forward to catching up with you on. So, in the meantime, have a great weekend, and we'll speak with you soon.
Sounds good. Thank you, Dan. I hope you and everyone else have a great, safe weekend as well.
Thank you, Shane. Appreciate it. And again, today we have been joined by Shane Lieberman, Federal Affairs Manager with the UBS U.S. Office of Public Policy, based in Washington, D.C. Before we close out, I do want to point out for our listeners, please be sure to reference the latest edition of the Washington Weekly publication that can be located up on UBS Online Services, along with the latest edition of the ongoing Election Watch publication series, title of which is Pandemic Politics, and the Election Watch publication can be located as well on the dedicated website, that's ubs.com/ElectionWatch. But for UBS clients, do be sure to reach out to your financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of the Washington Weekly publication or the Election Watch publication, or both, directly to you. From UBS On Air's remote studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us.
This presentation is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. Neither UBS Financial Services, Inc. nor any of its employees provide tax or legal advice. You should consult with your personal tax or legal advisor regarding your personal circumstances. In providing wealth management services to clients, we offer both investment advisory and brokerage services, which are separate and distinct and differ in material ways. For information, including the different laws and contracts that govern, visit ubs.com/workingwithus. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG, member FINRA, SIPC.